All right, 1 John. The distinction that we left on yesterday was in verse 11, he that hateth his brother, chapter 2, verse 11, he that hateth his brother is in darkness and walketh in darkness and knoweth not whither he goeth, because the darkness hath blinded his mind. Now, hateth is a verb. The same as love is a verb. Loveth. So it's loveth or hateth. Now, again, you've got to see from God's perspective, love is giving importance to meeting their need above yours. Hate is either self for self or sloth or hate. I mean, it becomes so crystalline, and this is, it's too bad Harry isn't here, but this is the whole point where your senses are exercised. What?
I'm here.
No, Gary. I didn't say Harry, did I? I said Harry?
Yes, you did.
Well, Harry isn't here either.
Thanks a lot.
No, he got an email from somebody that said in Hebrews 5 about that you should have your senses exercised to discern good from evil or good and evil. Well, from God's perspective, even Jesus Christ in the flesh isn't good. Only spirit is good. So you're discerning soul from spirit. What happened here? I think I did something wrong. God's punishing me for picking on Harry? It says all over. It says in Romans and elsewhere that if you in Galatians that if you walk in the Spirit, you shall not fulfill the lusts of the flesh. You don't walk in the Spirit by speaking in tongues or walking around being spiritual. You walk in the Spirit by the abandonment of self. The abandonment of self produces a result that's as sure as night follows day. More sure, and that result is that you will love the brethren. It isn't something you try to do, it's something that's done. If you're not walking in the Spirit, you can try to love the brethren, you can learn principles of doing it, but all you will end up doing, and that'll be tested, and you'll find out that your love of the brethren only goes so far. The whole essence of spirituality is abandonment of self and living by Him and knowing that anything else, anytime that you give credence to the flesh, to the senses, to the what we see, then you return to the flesh. So you're not walking in spirit. And by definition, if you are in the flesh, you will hate the brethren. Does that communicate to anybody? So it's not a how-to. Let me make sure you understand. Go to 1 John 5. We're going to skip ahead a little bit. Whosoever believeth that Jesus is the Christ is born of God. And everyone that loveth him that begat, loveth him also that is begotten of him. It's not a should, it's a what is. If you're born of God, you will prefer the brethren's interest over your own. If you're not born of God, you will spend all your time trying to act like you're doing it. You see the... You can't act this. Now, the big question is, are you born of God? Everybody understand me? All right. Now, we see a mystery. Now we're starting to see this as it's worked out. In verse 12, I write unto you, little children, because your sins are forgiven you for his name's sake. Now, positionally, as a little child or a darling infant, you are in the place, you're still in the world. You're in the world, maybe hiding under the blood of the Passover, and still waiting for something else to happen. And you therefore think time is necessary. That's the little child position. You understand this? This defines where you are, whether you're in, still in the world as a believer, or you've gone into the, you've been in the wilderness, whether you're in the promise and whether you're on the mercy seat. There is no time necessary to go from the believer in the world to the fullness of God on the mercy seat. The only thing that keeps us from there is our ideas of idolatry. So all that we do from the standpoint of the minute we become a believer is flee idolatry. And this describes these different positions. And it's location of sphere is a term in the Greek that defines a verb form. And so if you are still waiting for something to happen, you are still in the world. It doesn't say you're not saved or not, but you're still an infant. I write unto you, little children, because your sins are forgiven for his name's sake. And then he talks about, I write unto you, fathers. So he goes all the way from the little child to the father position, because as we go through this process, the circumstance that you're in defines where you are. I mean, you can go from being a little child about something, and then go to being a father about something, and go back to being a little child, then you're a teenager, and then you're a... Okay, so I write unto you, fathers, because you've known him that is from the beginning. Then I write unto you, young men. Again, this is the young man position. It's in the promised land, but not yet on the mercy seat. I write unto you, young men, because you have overcome the wicked one. Now, I write unto you, little children, and that's a different, it's not darling infant there, it's paidon or something like that, but it means a teenager. And it says, I write unto you, little children, because you've known the Father. And that's for most of you, because you're still in the wilderness. You don't have any options, you don't know what else to do, and you still think that in this position, nothing helps. Your prayer doesn't help. Exhortation doesn't help. The only thing that helps, the only thing that keeps you anchored, is that you've known the Father. And that's the position, because you're without options. Because if you had any other options, you'd have gone there. Is everybody hearing me? And now he said, I have written unto you, fathers, because you've known him that is from the beginning. Now, in the verb tense there, it's you have essentially known him, or you have been with him since the beginning, because your life is Christ. But it doesn't stay. We go back and forth here again. Oh, I have written unto you, young men, again, because you are strong, and the word of God abideth in you, and you've overcome the wicked one. But you're still in the young man position, because you've gone back to another sensory perception. Now, it sounds like spiritual schizophrenia. But it is the reality of what happens in the process. Again, process is the wrong word, but in the result of becoming sanctified. Because you may act like a father or have some understanding of the father position, and then you act like a darling infant over something else. And then it goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, until you understand this is the will of God, even your sanctification, that you have fled or have what? Have abstained or been fed up with fornication. So really, fornication is the place that defines where you are. And fornication isn't, it's obviously sex, but it's not just that. It's going any place other than the Father for anything. So again, this it goes from the darling infant, because your sin is forgiven, to the teenager, because the only thing you know is that you've known the Father. Nothing else helps. To the young adult, because you were strong and the word of God abideth continually in you and you've overcome the wicked one. And right into you fathers, because you've known him or been with him from the beginning. And you've seen that the reason you're the chief of sinners is you were the one that slew Abel. You were Cain that slew Abel. You are Nimrod you're Herod, you're Pilate, you're all the evil ones. So that makes you the chief of sinners, and therefore there is no credence to anything of the flesh. Now, in the Hebrew, there are 8 different positions that you vary. And John summarized them into these 4. The darling infant, the teenager, the young adult, and the father. But you don't learn your way into them. You unlearn your way. You empty into them. And everything that you don't like that comes at you is simply the Holy Spirit showing you another place where your idolatry is keeping you from the fullness of God. Everybody understand this? This sounds confusing, because it is confusing as you walk it. Because you said, well, I dealt with that, and then I'm on my way. No, and then something else hits you, and you're totally nailed again. What? So all of you understand this perfectly. You don't have anything to talk about. Or you just ignore it. Something's going on in here. Seems like it's coming from Ronnie. What? Nothing's going on? You're totally at rest.
Yeah, I'm sleepy. I didn't sleep good last
night. All right. Now, verse 15. Love not the world. And all this comes back down to this one thing. Love not the world. Again, love here is a verb. Agapeo, not the world, nor the things that are in the world. Give breath. That's what all love means here. It give importance to. Love not the world. And the world here is ion, A-I-O-N. And it means... we don't have a word for it in English, but in German it's the Zeitgeist. It's all the things that are going on at any given time in time and space. It doesn't matter whether it's the first century, it doesn't matter whether it's the Dark Ages, it doesn't matter whether it's now. Love not the world. Give breath not to anything that is in the world. Now, this is where you're going to fall, because something will always catch you that you give, and you say you're doing it in the name of God. You have politics in the name of God, or you have causes in the name of God, or you justify something because it's supposedly family values. You do something But it's this is where your test will be, whether you love the world or love not the world, and whether there's something that's going on in time and space that you're giving more importance to. Because again, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. That doesn't leave room for anything else. This is radical, if you hear what I'm saying. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And what has happened? You have given breath to something in the world, and therefore, and this can be a tremendous need. It can be anything. And your mind will automatically focus, because that's what we're hardwired to do. And you will have a cause. And it'll, in an instant, you'll be drawn away from the mystery of God back into the world, and you will not be able to discern that you're doing it. You will have a mission. You will have a cause. You will have a purpose. And it's so attractive. And I think every one of you know what I'm talking about. And all of us are subject to it.
It's like the old myth about the siren song. It's this thing that draws you under the rocks.
Well, it can be some huge need, which it's obvious that everybody that has anything to do with God must give importance to that. Our job is to be a prophetic voice, prophetic not to tell the future, but a prophetic voice to say, this is this, and that is that. Any thoughts, John? You see how quickly we can get seduced, though?
Hurricane victims.
Yeah. Big prophets.
Anything except our job is to have a prophetic ministry, which means that you stand as a sign and a wonder, because every believer is a threat to every system of the world. Because you don't give breath to the same things that they do. Give breath is what it means, the verb to love. And that's what's so unknown. Oh, I don't love this, I love God. No, you don't. You love what you give importance to. And the cause can be righteous. In fact, usually is. Otherwise, you wouldn't be a cause. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away in the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. Now from that you can get this interesting kind of view, if you see the meaning of these words. When Jesus said he is the way, the truth, and the life, he is the peace. He is everything. So, if anything is changing with time, it can't be of the way, the truth, and the life. If anything that you're saying to anybody changes with time, it can't be of the truth. And if it isn't, then the salt has lost its savor. It's good for nothing. Now this will catch you in a thousand ways. It'll catch you with your children. It'll catch you with your spouses. It'll catch you in the body. It'll catch you with everything. Well, not just you, it'll catch me. So we always have to be in a position of awareness that and exhorting one another daily while it is still called today. not to give breath. And boy, it sounds appealing, because you're trying to prove that you believe because you have some righteous cause. And this is, and again, remember, the cause, all that is the garment of the priest. And so what you're doing is, because that's the function of what somebody does, is really, it's only the garment. And if you're so starved that you have to eat the garment, then it's not going to last. And, you know, we've seen this thousands of times.
Why it ends up being burned.
Huh?
Why it ends up being burned, used as a wick.
Yeah.
Candle.
Anybody have any reaction, response?
Well, I certainly know it's true. The thing about the four positions and why it's written in that jumbled up way is just that's the walk. I've gotten to the point now where I go through long periods. Everything's fine. Now, in the last 48 hours, things have come into my, across my windshield, but have me thinking about the future. There's a thing in the future I'm going to have to do, and I don't want to have to do it, and it's going to be awful, and this is what it's going to be like. And then there's another thing that's going to happen that's just going to be terrible, and blah, 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 blah. And it's just, it's like mosquitoes.
How long have we been doing this? How long have you been here? 1983. 22 years, 23 years, pretty soon. Has he ever failed you?
Far more than I can imagine.
Then why would you think that something... This is the way you have to see this, and so that you can come to the end of that trick that your mind does. It doesn't matter what it's about. The anticipation of dread in some of you is the trap, it's the seduction. And the reason it is because you still have a measure of guilt that says you don't deserve to be at peace. And that, you know, that's what we say it so often, but to really see what it means, it's you sabotage yourself. You know, and I watch it happen, and I say, my God, you don't have to dread. Our anticipation is only of more of Him. And so anything that causes any kind of that angst is just, it's that thing that is seducing you away from this incredible mystery. And it's causing you to neglect this great salvation. And it happens so subtly, and that's why the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. You've got to go to war with that. You've got to go to war with seeing that it all the years that we've been doing and you've been doing, He's always been faithful. He's given far more than you can ever imagine. And you can't let your mind return to some dread because of something that's about to happen. It's a lie. But it is the most seductive of all lies, because it feeds that part of you that says, I don't deserve. And it's really, really, really evil. And this is why, you know, you can't give it one nanosecond of space. Is this communicating to anybody? We proceed from glory to glory, from faith to faith, not from mountaintop, dread, horror, down to the pit, that's over. You don't have to do that anymore. But what you need to do is know that the weapons of your warfare are not carnal. It's not about anything that you can do something about it. The weapons of your warfare are spiritual, and they're mighty through God to the pulling down of the strongholds. And tell you, from my perspective, I had more of those strongholds than anybody I know that I had to go to war with, and they still want to sneak back up again. You can't let them do it for a second. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of the strongholds, casting down imaginations in every secret high place that's exalting itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every single thought to the obedience of Christ, and having a readiness to revenge all disobedience once your obedience is fulfilled. The minute that thought comes, it can't be nourished, it can't be nursed, it can't be nurtured. It must be cast down. It cannot stand against it as finished. It cannot stand against it as perfect. It cannot stand against you have been perfected by one offering. It cannot stand against you own all things. So it's just a stupid, soulish thought that's trying to seduce you away from the mystery of God. Trying to cause you to love the world more than you love God. There's no excuse for it. There's no excuse for it. Oh, but you don't understand, Ole. Oh, yes, I do. So by your silence, everybody understands perfectly. So there's no more being seduced. No more screwing under those stupid trees. Huh, John?
Of course I'm going to be seduced.
Why?
Because my mind is in.
But it says you don't have to be anymore.
So
you're empowered. Well, by definition, if you don't respond, you're not seduced.
What?
If you don't respond, you're not seduced.
Uh-huh.
You don't owe it anything. That's what I'm trying to get at. That's the exact line of demarcation.
I thought of it, but your right seduction doesn't mean anything. It's how you respond to it.
That's right. That's what this whole this lesson this morning was about.
I just went on with
it. What he said.
What?
Just what he said.
What did you say?
What John said.
What did John say?
I don't know what you say.
No.
Somebody don't give in.
It's not seduction if you don't give in to it. But it's seduction if you give it 1 second of thought. And that's why I'm right into you a little, because that's, you return back to the little child position. You're the kid in the candy store afraid of the boogeyman, or kid in the bedroom afraid of the boogeyman under the bed, and even there, I run into you little children, because your sin is forgiven. I mean, it can have no power unless you give it power. That's the message. And you give it power by letting it remain, by letting it gel, or by intercourse with it. How many times have I said the same thing over and over?
My question is this. I don't know. I hear everything you say. I know it's true. I've seen it clearly. I say it to other people. What I don't know is what. I don't even know how to put it in words. Do I get into a conversation about it? I don't know what to do. The thoughts keep coming back. Once this starts, it's like there's somebody outside my house trying to get in. And they rap on the window, and I go and look out the window and say, get the hell out of here. And then a little while later, when I'm doing something else, they're knocking on the back door trying to get in.
You're not going to like what I'm going to say.
Well, I don't like a lot of what you say, so what?
You have made yourself unable to be exhorted by the people around you, so that I'm the only one that can exhort you. Because your responses have been so dramatic and so violent that it's put you in a place where other people can't exhort you. That's why you have to dwell in it and swim in it until you finally come and talk to me. And I am nothing special. They know the same thing I do. But because you know how you respond to Michael Melendez? That's exactly what you do to people. And that's why you can't do this alone. You have to leave yourself open to exhortation from the weakest person around, or from the most spiritually insensitive person. Because otherwise, this is why God has made this and let this happen, so that you would break down those walls and be vulnerable to what other people tell you. It's real, that's stupid. It's incredibly important that you hear this. Because somehow you've made it so that I'm the only one that can exhort you when you're in that position. And that can't be right. And so you need to see that you've got to let the person who you despise the most be the one that exhorts you. Does anybody hear me?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, for years it was a joke around here, because every time I had a first fruit meeting with somebody, and I'd ask the question, does anybody have anything against anybody? And you'd have to come up and visit. And again, it served its purpose. Now you can just divorce it. It's a childish thing you don't have to do anymore. It served its purpose well. Now it's time to divorce it. Anybody else? You were going to say something. Matt.
I was just going to say that I don't know if this will help Harry and the walk with, what you asked today, but it doesn't offend me, it bothers me, but you're the only one that won't say good morning back to me in the morning. I say good morning to every single person that comes through the door, and you look at me, you might raise your eyebrows, then you walk away. And I've always thought maybe he was like me, maybe he resents that I'm not part of the community here or whatever, I don't know. But that causes tension, because I try to be friendly to everybody. And so in my mind, which of course that's my responsibility to deal with, my mind does, but I think it's that openness with everyone in the community and the walk with God that's important as well, just opening up. And I think it kind of leads into what Ollie's saying. But, even that, and I know you don't resent me or anything, I think, but I guess I really don't know, but, you've never done anything mean to me, but that's not friendly in the morning. Doesn't make it right or wrong. But that may be part of the answer to your solution or something about opening up a lot of things, because know.
Yeah, there's a...
There's a wall or something. I don't know.
There's a thing that happens where... And this is a perfect example where... it's not just you. I'm not, this has nothing to do with you, but it's all of us that... there has to be something about us that I don't know how to say it. And I'm not talking about some phoniness or anything, but that we are so confident of in Him, of who and what we are, that we can be totally generous, and I'm speaking to myself now too. We can be generous with everything, with our love, with our greetings, with our time. There is nothing about us that we should be miserly about. And I'm guilty because sometimes I don't feel like talking to anybody, and you pretty well know it if I don't. But that is an excuse either. I mean, I can't. I have to see in Him that I never have to have a spirit of poverty. And that poverty is really what we reflect when we're not when I treat people like I sometimes do.
I don't understand that. Understand the word poverty there.
Poverty is that we are in. I hurt so much that I don't have enough to be generous to somebody, or it's the same thing that we do with money, but it's more obvious when we do it with our emotions or our responses to people. I'm preaching to myself now.
Because even if you feel, there's still a place to give that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you got to give.
If there's some kind of way whatever.
Right. You give, but just by the act of giving that weakness, you are. Not get you are reflecting what's the antithesis of the spirit of poverty, and you know, it's a big deal, and I need people to exhort me about that. Okay, does any of this make sense?
Well, actually, it makes a tremendous amount of sense because the things that I'm thinking about that I'm troubled by. Thoughts that I'm troubled by. The main component of it is I don't want to give of myself. I don't want to be exposed. I don't want people coming into me. I don't want to have to.
No, I understand.
And it's getting worse and worse and worse. It's not getting better. I used to be a fairly outgoing, congenial kind of a person. Well, I don't want to be around people. I don't like being around people. I look at like Joyce Anna's always going to these meetings and doing AFS stuff and welcoming people into her home and all that. I'm exactly the opposite of that. I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to be with anybody. I want to be left alone.
But again, I'm getting
more like you in Bloom.
But again, this is where the boundaries are getting smaller and smaller and smaller until pretty soon. Now, what the exhortation of God is always expand.
Right. I mean, this troubles me.
Well, again, all you have to do is confess it. Then it's not your business.
It's like the stupid thing you made me register for yesterday. I don't want to go there because I don't want to have to spend the day with a bunch of religious strangers. Well, anybody. But in this case, religious strangers.
But I want you to.
I've already registered. I'm just saying, that's the thing. I didn't realize, but that's the thing that's bothering me, is I don't want to have to...
Well, I want
here
you,
I am.
I want you to look and say, just think how much you have to give.
Well, I think part of it is I don't think I have anything to give. I'm embarrassed. I feel poor. I realize how stupid this is to say, but I feel...
But that's why...
You know, like the country mouse going to the city or something. It's ridiculous. I've never felt this.
No, but listen...
Well, I have actually felt this way before, but
listen,
I didn't feel this way.
Yeah, but listen. It is all about this... It's seeing a lack in the mystery. It's seeing a lack in... And it's the poverty consciousness.
Yeah, me.
And you.
Yeah.
And... That's what it's served its purpose, so you can divorce it.
Yeah, because I know it's not true.
That's, yeah.
I know. In fact, I know it's exactly the opposite of the truth.
All righty.
You're gonna start going to parties and making small talk.
Am I? take it, big guy.